Now we have Arjan Srpanice, and he's going to talk about how LiveView can be used to keep you warm. So give it up.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Nice to see such a big turn up. When we last organized this dev room, I think 3 years ago, it was a much smaller room. But it was really packed. But now it's not packed, but it's obvious because it's a bigger room. So, but I'm very glad that that everybody's here. My name is Arjan Srpanice, and I'm going to talk a bit about knitting today with you, and also a bit about LiveView. So I'm going to give a little bit of background about my project and about what I'm doing. Then I'm going to talk about LiveView and how I use it. And then I'm going to wrap up. So let's start with some background. I've been programming since I was a little kid. Yesterday in the when we had a beer together, I talked about how what is your first OTP release that you used, and mine was actually R13. So that's a bit, and you can guess my age a bit. It's from 2009, so I've been using Erlang since 2009. Before that, I used PHP a lot, but then I got introduced by somebody to Erlang, and that actually Mark Worrell had a bit the same story as José Valim had when he created Elixir. Mark wanted to create also a web framework for Erlang. Elixir was not yet born. And so he created Zotonic, a web framework. And I'm still a contributor to that. And it's still alive, although it's not as popular as Elixir or Phoenix for that matter. But then later I got used to programming in Elixir, and I've been doing that since for quite a bit. So my background is I studied AI. I have a master's in that. Back when AI was not hot at all. It was the middle of the winter of AI. Nobody wanted to do anything with it. But I thought, hey, why not? But then it turned out I did not really do anything with AI for a long time. So I just became a regular web developer doing first PHP, like I said, and then Elixir. So, but I'm still interested in AI, in hardware and software, and also in art, actually. Because when I stopped or graduated from AI school, I went to the Art Academy, Rietveld Academy in Amsterdam, and I decided to proceed a career in art, or at least, you know, try to do something more creative outside of pure computer science. Let's talk about that a bit, because it gets me slowly to the knitting stuff. So I worked with Klazine van de Zandschulp a lot. She's a friend of mine and an artist slash interaction designer. And together we did quite a lot of projects that were related to this kind of stuff. So for instance, we built an app where you could interact with a fake social network from the Dutch Golden Age. So you would walk around in a museum, and then you would walk next to a Rembrandt painting, and then Rembrandt would send you a private message and wanted to become your friend. And that way, it actually told a story about back in that golden age. There was also already like a social network. It told us the story of history, basically, through a current situation, and it's still used in use by children mostly for education. Other similar kind of project is where in Ghent, where we created a augmented reality installation where there was actually a little chat going on here, and there was an archaeologist who was chatting to you about the objects that you would scan. Another project that was really nice during COVID actually was Distance Disco. And Duo Disco, which is like an app where you dance silently with your headphones on and you're matched to somebody else, and then you have to basically mimic how you dance, and then based on if you find somebody who dances like you, then you're probably dancing to the same song because everybody listens to another song. I gave a talk. It's also written, that was written in Erlang actually, that the backend for that, like with processes for everything and matching people together. That's another talk. Another talk that I actually did 3 years ago here was with this printer. It was also a project for Klazine, where she created like some kind of interactive cooking installation from the future, So you first would have to interact with this Google speaker over here. And then the speaker would tell you, ask you a few very personal questions, like, do you believe in God? And do you value your privacy? And what would you do if, I don't know. Anyway, and based on those information, there would be a little recipe printed out, and you would get instructions on to make something in that installation. So it was only logical that when Klazien got some new project that she thought of me. And she thought of, hey, I have this, I have now this customer, which is, or customer, it's, I don't know, it was some art collective of people who approached Klazien to make some kind of installation for a conference. So like conference like this, where there would be somewhere a back channel with information on how the people in the conference are doing. So for instance, a graph of the mood or tweets or pictures, etc. And she thought, hey, why would we show that on a screen? Why not show it in a knitting? Which is logical, right? and then she thought of me. Oh, this doesn't work, sorry. I have to do it like this. Because actually 10 years ago, I already hacked a knitting machine once together with two very talented people who did actually most of the knitting. I just did most of the software around it. But this was also a long time ago. You can, I think, still look this this project up. So Klazien thought, well, I want to make like a giant knitting for a conference where everything that is happening in the conference gets knitted out, and then we have like this big carpet that you can still look at after, like a big blanket of conference feedback. So. She asked me, like, do you want to do this project? And I was like, yeah, why not? because it was, it was for me, it's not like I do this kind of stuff full time. It's more that I do it because I just like it. And whenever Klazien has an idea, I just do it. So we went onto eBay or Marktplaats, actually, and we bought this pass-up electronic knitting machine, which is a machine from, I think, 30 or 40 years ago. Swiss made, so very well made. Some people describe this machine as the Rolls Royce under the knitting machines. So I thought, hey, this is a nice machine to look at and to see if I can make it knit what I want. So I bought it and I put it in my home. So now I have a room which is basically the knitting room, because it's a large machine. It's like this. I couldn't bring it, unfortunately. I would have. And I thought, well, it's like a printer, right? It has pixels. Every knitting is a printer, is a pixel. And I just, you know, write a printer driver for it, basically. Well, it's not that easy, as it turns out, unfortunately. And I've, over the last couple of months, I've grown a lot of respect for, you know, for the whole knitting industry, robotics things, because there's actually a lot more to it than just. Now, we as a software developer, we're very lucky to be in such a stable environment where we just write code and it does something or it doesn't something, but there's nothing in between. You know, it's not hardware. It's kind of interesting to learn. And there's also, I found out there's actually YouTube videos of people operating this machine, and the those people are usually like 60-year-old women, but they can do it. So, well, there's like a lot of instructions how to do that. There's a lot of parameters to tweak, a lot of weird tools that you have to use to get it right. But eventually, I got it somehow working. It's basically the parameter space of, like, you have to have a certain knit. You know, a certain thickness of the yarn, and you have to, like, the proper tension of the yarn, because otherwise you get loops. It's unbelievable how much. It's basically like trying to learn to play the violin, or something like that, and like trying to play the violin without a proper instructor present, or the instructor has died already because it's such an old violin. So I have a very small clip of me knitting, if it's here. Hello. Oh, there we go. It takes a while. And there's no release, no sound. Oh, that's very short. But this is basically how it goes. So the machine is there. There's yarn coming in from the top. and the machine goes over the needles. There's a lot of needles here, and then once this carriage goes over, it basically the needles hook into it and make it like a yarn and or the knitting, and the knitting comes out underneath. And how did I want to automate this? I have to watch my time a bit, and so going okay. I actually found online some Germans who actually used this machine before to hack it, because there's actually, damn it, this doesn't work. So what I wanted to replace was this, how you used to program it was, you basically, there was this big flowchart in this manual where you would need to press the buttons in a certain combination and then set the dials, everything, and then upload the pattern. And the way you upload the pattern is you basically take a piece of matrix paper, like with a grid, and you make some of the cells you make black, and that's basically your pattern. So you draw pixel art on a paper, and you feed the paper into this scanner, because this is a kind of a scanner, and then this thing somehow says, okay, well, I've now remembered that pattern, and then this machine communicates with the thing that goes, the carriage that goes back and forth, and that actually then knits that pattern. I did not try to do that because it sounded very hard. So instead, I found this space from the Hackerspace Bamberg, in which they used an Arduino, because this is the connector that you need to plug into the console. So I basically replaced the whole console with an Arduino. So on one side there's the Arduino communicating with the carriage, and then out comes digital signals, just a serial protocol that goes back into the computer, and then the computer can tell, you know, knit this pattern, knit that pattern, etc. If you have more questions about this, I can answer a lot. I'm not going to do it right now. But basically, the new user interface that I'm working right now, it looks a bit like this. So it's just basically a browser. And also because I wanted to use Live View for something. So we're finally getting to that subject. Yes. So this knitting interface shows a bit. It shows, well, basically where the machine is at in the knit process, and it shows the current color that it is knitting. It shows whether you have to move it left or right, because there is a motor. You can enable the motor so it knits automatically, but you can also do it manually. So it has a little counter, it has a start stop button, and it has several configuration things, like, because it's a very big knitting machine, so you have to specify, oh, I have to knit it here, or I can knit it there, it's so wide. And then you can upload a pattern, so you can type in ones and zeros here, basically, literally, you can type in ones and zeros, and it will then create a pattern, and then there's a state machine that will loop through that pattern to send the proper instructions to the Arduino. So I'm going to demo that a bit later, because first I want to go a bit into the detail of this it's not only Live View. It's basically just a Phoenix or just an Elixir project that has several parts. One of it, of course, is the user interface, which is all the way over there. And the other part is the actual knitting machine that's over here. So it's connected with an Arduino, like I showed. And it's the Arduino is connected to the Elixir. So this middle part is the interesting software part that I've built. So there's a few components here, and I've created some kind of color coding for that I invented myself. So basically, green is an Erlang process or Elixir process, and orange is like state. It's just data, and without color is something that is not very interesting. So basically, whenever I use the Nerves UART library, I think it was already mentioned, the Nerves project is really nice for doing IoT kind of things with Elixir. So UART is the protocol, it's basically a serial port. So whenever you program an Arduino, you can tell it to send and receive serial commands, and you can very easily listen to them with Elixir. There's a monitor that basically looks for the serial port, so I can hot plug basically the knitting machine into my computer and pull it out. And then basically whenever it receives some serial packet, just a line, basically just a text line, it sends this over, Phoenix pops up to the rest of the system. And then there are several other components that listen to those serial commands. One of them is the control, which is a gen server that that basically has all this state. Oh, damn it. Basically has all this state, like where am I in the knitting, etc. So that gen server holds the state of the knitting machine itself. So that basically has the task of transforming this pattern plus the settings into a sequence of commands that needs to be sent out to the knitting machine. And also the state is also updated whenever new serial commands come in. And then the control is also connected to the live view, which actually shows everything that is being done. So what I'm going to talk the rest of is mostly this part, because that's the title of the talk, right? It's about a live view and how that works and what it is actually, how it works in my case. Are there any questions? Oh, I have 10 minutes left, really? Okay, I have 10 minutes left. So let's go for a bit quicker now. What is live view? Well, from the docs it says, live view provides rich real-time experiences with user-rendered HTML server-rendered HTML. And to understand what that actually means, let's dive into a little bit of the web history. When this whole internet thing started, the first thing there was just a browser with HTML, right? So you had a web server you uploaded the HTML file to and you just view it. That's basically it. And when you want to go to another page, you just click a link and you view the other page. That's basically it. This is just what we now call a static website. Very static. So that worked pretty well for a while. At some point, people thought, well, we can also not make this static, but we can send something different back every time. So that's when it became DHTML, dynamic HTML. PHP was born, other programming. I'm getting feedback from the mic now. It's a bit irritating. whatever. So basically, the HTML became dynamic. So there was a lot of logic on the server. You would make a PHP file that rendered out HTML. The HTML was different for each user even, because there were sessions. You have cookies where you store basically the state, like this user is logged in, this user has this stuff in his cart, whatever. So there's a lot of logic on the server that renders into HTML, and then the HTML is just sent over the wire, and the browser displays it, win, done. So that worked pretty okay. But it was not really interactive, because every time you had to do something in the site, it would reload the page. So then at some point, people thought, hey, I can make like little effects. I can do like hovers and, you know, animations. So we make JavaScript was born basically, I think, with IE version something 3. It started to become popular. So there was a bit of JavaScript written to make things a bit more lively and a bit more dynamic without having to reload the page every time. Well, of course, you know what happened next. So JavaScript became very big. So a lot of the logic was actually moved to the client. So the pages did not reload every time. It's basically you just load the page one time and then JavaScript basically takes care of the rest. So it replaces parts of the HTML with other parts. It even, you know, sends you to another URL without actually reloading the page with push state kind of things. There was a lot of logic on the client suddenly, and it would fetch underwater, not over HTML, but it would just use like what's called AJAX, but currently we have like REST and GraphQL, all kinds of protocols to get data into the client and then do stuff with the data. So there was a lot of logic suddenly on the client. And this is still the case. I think when you write JavaScript, there's like, or when you any web project, is quite heavy on the server side or on the client side. Now with LiveView, the pendulum has swung in the other way a bit again, because the actually very interesting thing about LiveView is that we can do very interactive things. We don't have to reload the page every time to do something interactive. We can stay on the same page, but we can still dynamically change parts of the page without having to do very heavy, create all kinds of APIs and do complicated things. So suddenly with LiveView, the logic is again mostly, for 99%, I would say, back on the server. So it's actually it's like a bit again from back in the old days. You just render something, you just put it to the browser, and then the browser displays it. It's as simple as that. You don't need to write a lot of JavaScript, unless you really want to. And that's actually one of the promises of LiveView, that you can make UIs very quickly, just staying in Elixir and just templating from Elixir. So how does that actually work? Is there a diagram on the next slide? Yes. So so basically what happens is, I can send this one. Well, I can show this one first. So there's one LiveView process. So basically in Erlang, right, there's processes are very lightweight. 5 minutes left, oh no. Templates are rendered on the server, and they are rendered every time you update the state. But it does not send the whole template or over to the client, because it just sends the things that are changed. So basically, it works a bit like this. So the first time it renders, we get some HTML, and then it actually connects over a WebSocket, and then it says, hey, I'm a LiveView process, and I can now interact with you. So, and then whenever some state changes, the browser is now connected to the process in the corresponding process in the server. So when the state changes, it actually re-renders something, and it actually just sends the things that have changed, sends it to the browser, and then the browser is intelligent enough that it can just patch small parts of the DOM tree to just change that part and not change everything. So that makes it very, very lightweight, very, very flexible. And this is a bit, well, when you start with this, it's now integrated into Phoenix, the Elixir web framework. And I will give a little demo now, I think. Yeah, so let's make the knitting live. So it would look a bit like, when you write an Elixir module, it looks a bit like this. There's always something you have to write, it's mount. When you mount something, you just return, okay, I'm mounted, and I have some assigns in my socket. It's a bit like normal Phoenix templating. You assign things to something, and then you can render, use those assigns to render something. So back below here, there's actually the render function, and in this case, it just renders an image tag, image class movie. Wonder what that is. And the source is an image URL with a variable in it, a frame, and the frame is a sign that is assigned here. So it renders a single image. And whenever a serial command comes in from a serial port, basically I calculate a new frame and then assign it to the socket again. So this triggers another render here, and it will probably change the frame number, so it will change the image. So this basically connects the serial port to a live view. Maybe that's better. So I actually have a demo of that, because I did not bring my knitting machine, but I actually brought my knitting machine emulator, which is an Arduino with a potentiometer attached. And I can probably now, always this will fail, but who cares, plug it in, and then we go to this. So if you look in the source, we see somewhere this is the one, we see the movie, it's now at frame number 15. And then if we is it running? Should be running. If we now turn the knob. Yes, okay. So now I can knit. You see, I am knitting. So I did not bring my whole machine, but I brought a virtual version of myself that is now at home. And I can control it through this little Arduino over here. Yeah, I thought of this last night to demo it like this. It was not really prepared, but... I hope that gets you a bit of the idea how LiveView, you know, updates its state. And in this case, it is very simple, but an actual LiveView, of course, is much bigger. Actually, that is the rest of my talk that I'm still need to do. Let's continue very quickly. How much? Oh, time's up. Okay. Is it really up?
I think that you can take like 1 or 2 minutes.
Okay. I will quickly skip through the next slides then. So you can imagine that writing a single Elixir module with every logic in it, you get one big assign with everything. It's not really scalable. So there are actually two things to make that scalable. You make components. So one of the components is function components, which are basically just rendering templates inside functions. And then the other ones are Phoenix Live components, and those are basically like sub live views in your live view that have their own state and their own render function and their own mount function. So in this case, in my UI, these are, I just created a few components. One component is a settings component, which contains a form. Another component is a row component that just renders a single row. So this row component is very simple. It's just, yeah, it just renders basically a set of divs. And then you can call it like this. So it's basically in the template syntax using a function component is basically the same as a normal tag, but you prepend it with a dot, which is because it's basically a function call. And the live components are stateful. So live components have their own state, so they have a mount with a, you can assign things to there. It's basically what I already said. It's a live view inside a live view. So these signals directly communicate with the live components in this case. Then there's some more things like slots. You can create like different parts of your component and make them into like separate things where you can put part of your DOM tree as well. And I just wanted to say there's a lot out there. Like there's a big community, and I think LiveView is really getting a lot of traction. And it's actually a shame I have not done anything really with LiveView in production, actually. I wanted to make a disclaimer there. But I really like where it's going. And there's a lot of projects popping up with component libraries and people making stuff on top of it. There's the Storybook project, which is also very nice, which allows you to make a library of components and then have like a live environment somewhere where you can document these components and try them out and copy-paste the code for you to use inside your LiveView. So there's a lot of things. There's JavaScript integration, which I'm not going to show. There's LiveView Native coming up. It's also very nice technology where you don't render things to the browser, but you render things into a native app so that you actually build like a native app. Like what React Native is to React is, well, you get the drift. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Arjen.